Hello, everybody. I'm Parrish Alford.
And I'm Logan Lowry, and this is Double Coverage.
Ole Miss and Mississippi State Talk brought to you by the Daily Journal and DJournal.com. Hello, everyone. This is Parrish Alford with the Daily Journal. I'm joined by Logan Lowry, our Mississippi State beat writer, and this is Double Coverage, a production of the Daily Journal. We're glad you've chosen to click in with us today. Lots going on. Mississippi State getting ready for an NCAA baseball regional. Ole Miss gets a national championship, an individual national championship in men's golf. We'll talk about that in a little bit. Lots more to talk about as well. Logan, you're about to get on the road, but you don't have to go too far.
No, I don't. I kind of had a gut feeling it was going to be Hattiesburg all along for Mississippi State to head down to that regional. Southern Miss has played unbelievable this season. Looking at it, I think this is the most wins they've ever had as a program, and they're just now getting into the postseason. So, an opportunity to win a few more here. But Mississippi State, once they lost that Georgia series and an LSU series to end the regular season, that took them out of the conversations to host. And you saw some locations that they could wind up at, Long Beach State, and I was kind of hoping for that one, but at the same time, that's a long way to go for a baseball regional. You saw some other ones maybe up in the Carolinas, and obviously Tallahassee is a popular spot for Mississippi State to wind up as well. But get to stay in state, go down to Hattiesburg. I've never been to that baseball park, so it's going to be a new experience down there, and going to have to see how things are. It's already a sellout. I think it's going to be a lot of Southern Miss fans there. I don't think any of the other three teams really had an opportunity to get a whole lot of tickets, and it's upset a lot of Mississippi State fans because they love to turn out for those regionals. But they're going to have to either pull out their wallets to scalp some tickets or I guess watch from the parking lot. But it's going to be a lot of Southern Miss fans down there, and should be a good weekend if they can, avoid the weather.
Well, I have not been to Pete Taylor Park since the early 1990s. I'm sure it's very different and much improved. What's the capacity there? I mean, I've heard from the very beginning what a tough ticket this was going to be, and how a lot of people who ordinarily would be there are going to be left out. What is the capacity? And really, each school gets a few tickets. What was State's allotment?
I think it was somewhere around 200, if I read correctly. I think the capacity is only like 4,000 or so. I don't know the exact capacity. I don't have that with me. But, I know it's a smaller stadium than what we're accustomed to seeing, in the Southeastern Conference. But, I don't think there was a whole lot of tickets left. And once, the parents gobbled those up, I don't know that there was really many that were made available to fans for that. So it's going to be a large, predominantly home crowd, and Mississippi State's going to have to try to overcome that and see if they can get some wins. Like I said, I think it's a 80% chance of rain this weekend down there. So they're going to be scattered. That may push the games back. I know that's one of the reasons Scott Barry, Southern Miss's head coach, wanted to get that early game. They've chosen the 1 o'clock games, and Mississippi State and South Alabama will play at 6 o'clock Friday evening. So, I think they wanted to take that early game just in case there was some weather and got pushed back. They're not starting at an odd time, because of weather. So, they're right as the home team. They get that choice, and that's what they decided to do.
Now, State and South Alabama, how familiar are they with each other? Seems like they've been around.
Yeah, I think this is the fourth time they've played this season. They met earlier this year in Starkville for kind of one of those round robin series that Mississippi State likes to play. And Mississippi State won both of those ball games. They won 2-0 and 8-6. So two run ball games in those sets. And then they came back and played a little bit later in April and lost that game in Mobile 5-2 in kind of a midweek game. Mississippi State, if you remember, that was the game Mississippi State kind of started putting pitchers in position spots and position players on the mound. And it was one of those just crazy games where Andy Canizero got fed up and wanted to send a message to his team. And, That was kind of how that game went. But, yeah, it should be a formidable opponent. You know, they played Southern Miss as well this week, this year as well. Southern Miss beat Mississippi State down in Pearl 7-5 back on March 21st. So, you know, they've played four games against their opponents in this region. And the four seed in this tournament, Illinois-Chicago, Mississippi State's never played them, but, you know, it's obviously, you know, South Alabama won their conference tournament, Illinois-Chicago won their conference tournament, and Southern Miss won their conference and played in the conference tournament championship game. So it's going to be a lot of competition down there in Hattiesburg this weekend. Should be some good baseball.
How do you think Andy Cannizzaro handles his pitching for the weekend?
Well, I talked to him this morning. We had a media availability right before they had practice here in Starkville. We're recording this on a Wednesday. He hasn't announced he was going to wait to see how the bullpens went for today. And he had narrowed it down to Connor Pilkington and Cole Gordon. You know, it's going to be one of those two guys. He got great outings out of them over in Hoover last week. Connor Pilkington threw 8 shutout innings against Georgia, and then Cole Gordon went 7-plus innings against Florida, threw 7 shutout innings, and then gave up a single to start the 8th inning. That run ended up coming around to score as Florida scored 11 runs in that 8th inning to win that ball game. So, you know, Cole Gordon had a great outing last week. Connor Pilkington's got a great outing last week. They need both of those guys are going to start this weekend for Mississippi State for sure. Not sure which games they're going to go on the mound, but they need that type of outing out of them because the pitching depth is just so bad for Mississippi State. They just don't have a whole lot of options. And, you know, they saw that last weekend in Hoover. The State just ran out. They had to play 4 games. And they just don't have the pitching to last that long. They just don't have the arms to run out there numerically. And so they need great starts out of their starters and try to go as many innings as possible. And Connor Pilkington's been able to do that. He pitched against South Alabama earlier this year, threw 7 2/3 shutout innings against them. And then Peyton Plumlee started the other 2 games against South Alabama this year and pitched pretty well, too. He's kind of become a bullpen option for Mississippi State, kind of that long relief role, and I'm sure he'll be called upon this weekend as well. I think it's going to be all hands on deck, you know, as far as the pitching goes. I mean, Mississippi State just doesn't have the numbers out there, so everybody has to be available. Everybody's probably going to pitch this weekend.
Well, Logan, I have spent most of my Memorial Days the last 15 or 16 years around a watch party for Ole Miss, getting ready to get into the NCAA baseball tournament, but not this season. It was, you know, it was different. They felt like they had a small chance, and they did at 14-16 in the SEC regular season, and then even 0-1 in the tournament. They had a small chance. But when you have a small chance, what you can't afford are upsets in the other conference tournaments, and there were many of them. There were a lot of what you hear the talking heads refer to as bid stealers, you know, teams that were not going to get an NCAA tournament any way other than winning the conference tournament. And every time that you have one of those, and every time you have an upset in a conference tournament, the Big 12, for example, with Oklahoma State, an 8 seed, winning the tournament, that pushes down and pushes farther away teams that are on the bubble for an at-large bid. And frankly, Ole Miss at 14-16 was on the bubble, but, you know, not that firmly attached to it. The commentators on the selection show on Monday did not have Ole Miss in the first 4 out. They would have been like in that next group out. So they were, you know, a handful of teams away from making the tournament. It wasn't like they were right there on the cusp. And they, you know, had lots of opportunities and just did not take advantage of enough of them. And one of the things that players talked about on Monday when we met with the captains, Colby Bortles and Tate Blackman, was how inconsistent this team was and how good this team could look from game to game. But as Bortles said, they just kept waiting to go on this 10 or 15 game winning streak when they were really going to click and just roll through a couple of weeks of the schedule, as many Ole Miss teams have done in the past. But this team never did that. And the pitching that was very good for Ole Miss most of the season wasn't quite as good at the end of the year. Starters not going as deep into games, so the bullpen being a little bit overworked. And, you know, they just weren't as clean on the mound as they were. And everybody looks at offense with this team, and, you know, that's a good place to look because they struggled to score runs. There was some improvement offensively. We saw the team batting average go from 242 up to about 260 before settling back down at 253. That 253 is last in the SEC, but if you peel back the layers and look at the conference-only statistics against SEC teams, you know, Ole Miss was around ninth or eighth in batting average. So there was some improvement, but just not enough improvement. And, you know, this is not a good start for that number one ranked signing class. That group was ranked number one by D1Baseball.com and by Baseball America, two of the most well-known, well-read college baseball publications. And they were ranked number two by Collegiate Baseball, so very, very highly regarded class that will not begin its college career in postseason. And one of the biggest reasons is that the members of that class who were supposed to hit did not get off to the same start as the pitchers did. The freshmen, the newcomers, pitched better. Ryan Rollison making the all-freshman team as a starter. Will Etheridge pitching big innings, Greer Holston as well. But when you look at the hitters in the class, they just didn't have the same success, whether that was Thomas Dillard, Cole Zabowski, or Chase Cockrell, just were not consistent and really didn't provide much as the season went along. And the other thing, Ole Miss in recent seasons, you've seen some veterans take really big jumps from sophomore to junior seasons and really increase their production. You saw that with the 2014 team that went to the College World Series when Austin Bousfield, Will Allen, and Sykes Orvis all had really big years. And you saw it again last year in 2016 when the Rebels went 19-11 in the SEC regular season. You know, really big jumps for J.B. Woodman and Henry Lartigue. Didn't see that as much from the veterans this year. Bortles and Blackman were good, but they weren't outstanding. They weren't that kind of they didn't make that kind of jump. So, you know, it all comes back to taking advantage of the opportunities before you when they're there, and Ole Miss just didn't win enough games. So we'll see what this recruiting class does as a sophomore group next year. And we'll see what other talent Mike Bianco can put around it with the 2017 class. I expect that Ole Miss will be back in postseason next year. But a lot of it's going to depend on how these freshmen this year, how do they hit? You know, can they make that year one to year two improvement? We'll see. So Ole Miss baseball season concludes. It was golf that captured the headlines really for Ole Miss this week, with sophomore Braden Thornberry of Olive Branch shooting a 1-under-71 to capture the NCAA championship for the individuals. Now, Ole Miss made the tournament, you know, as a team as well, but didn't make the final cut. This was Thornberry competing as an individual, and he won the national championship. Really came from behind to do it. He was 2-under going into the last day. I had a reader email me, Logan, a guy who's been around Ole Miss Athletics a long time, David Robinson over there in Oxford. And I haven't checked his facts here. I don't know if they are accurate. I believe they are because I know he knows his Ole Miss Athletics. But David says that as far as he can count, and he's not counting the football national championships with the banners in the stadium because those are – they are recognized national championships, but it's like from different media outlets and whatnot. As far as national champions on the field, he counts Sam Kendricks in the pole vault in 2014 and 2013, then Braden Thornberry in 2017 with men's golf, and he goes back with, according to David's research, the only other on-the-field national champion. He goes back to 1938 in boxing, Steve Wilkerson, in the 155-pound weight class. Logan, I don't ever remember boxing as an NCAA sport. I don't go back that far with it. I know it's not something we've covered.
No, I haven't done any boxing. I wouldn't be opposed to it. I'd probably have to read up on the rules of how some of those rounds are scored. I'm a professional wrestling connoisseur. I don't do boxing very much. So, I'd have to get up to the facts if we had to go to covering boxing.
Well, boxing, I'm not sure it would go over in the NCAA today. It's just kind of too violent, don't you think? I mean, maybe it's mixed martial arts, that's pretty violent too. Maybe they'll pick up the mixed martial arts there. But 1938, Steve Wilkerson in the 155-pound boxing class. So interesting little known stat there for Ole Miss from a reader, David Robinson. Logan, we got some news. I'll go ahead and call it disappointing news today with some of the football kickoff time announcements. I did not have high expectations for the Ole Miss game at Cal on September 16th. I didn't think that was going to be like an 11 a.m. Central kickoff or anything like that. But my worst fears have been realized, as that game will start at 9:30 Central Time. And you have some experience with this. I'll tell you, just looking at the travel plans that I already have in place, it's going to be, okay, because that's 9:30 Central Time, so it's 7:30 Pacific, and my flight on Sunday to come back leaves at 9:50 Pacific. So I'm thinking that 7:30 game gets over about 11:30, with deadlines being long gone. Maybe I can be quick in the press box. Maybe I'm back at the room around 1 and get about 6 hours of sleep before I get up and go to the airport. But, I know you had that experience at BYU. What was the kickoff time for that game, Central Time?
If I remember correctly, it was – oof. I want to say it was 9:30 as well. Let me check on that real quick. It was 9:15. So, 9:15 Central. So, it was a late one.
Yeah, and stayed at Hattiesburg last year was 9 o'clock, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was 2 years ago.
But that was 9 o'clock, right? Okay.
It was a 9 o'clock kick, sure was. But I just hope it doesn't take you 32 hours to get back from out west like it did me from BYU last year. I ended up getting stranded in Chicago, of all places, and it took me that long. My flights just kept getting delayed and late, and then I missed my flight in Chicago because my flights were delayed in Salt Lake City, and then my flights were delayed the next morning in Chicago 3 different times, and I finally got back to Jackson and then turn around, had to drive two hours back up to Starkville. So it was just a nightmare. I haven't been on a plane since then, and I know I'll have to eventually, but anything that's been in driving distance, like when I went out to Oklahoma City or Dallas, I've opted to drive.
Well, I know, Logan, before that experience, you were kind of you were usually a guy who was eager to take a flight and get to the airport, and that was kind of a preferred method of travel for
it
you.
It was.
I've always been one who, if the game is driving distance, I'll take a little time and drive out there. I like the freedom that brings to leave when the game is over, leave when you want to leave, drive part of the way back, and, maybe even see a couple of things along the way. Cal Berkeley is not in driving distance. So, I made my flight arrangements, a long time ago and to get out in front of that and try and get a good price and was able to do that. It reaches a point, Logan, with these 9 o'clock, after 9 o'clock kickoffs, of course, mine has been a long time in coming. I've covered a lot of the 8:30 kicks, and, we get a couple of those every year, it seems like. But I have not had a football game that has started at 9 o'clock or later. But now that I do, it's going to start at 9:30. So that'll be a Daily Journal record. And there reaches a point in covering the game that, you know it's not going to make the print edition. So that takes a little pressure off, It's just cover the game, and when it's over, you go and get the story, and you come back and write it and put it online, and you you know, you want to be quick, but there's not that pressure of, hey, the press is waiting on you. So that it does change that way a little bit. You know, what kind of conversations did you and John Pitts have during that BYU game? I mean, you know, I'm assuming all you did was write for the web and maybe write a second day, right?
Well, I think we actually – it was so late. It was actually on a Friday night, you know, 9:15 right. on a Friday night. So we had all that high school coverage. We had to get in that night, and I mean, where were we going to make deadline anyway? So, you know, I wrote it for the web and then, you know, turn around. And I think we ended up running just the regular stuff like we always do. So it actually looked like our normal Sunday college football coverage when it finally actually made the paper. I don't remember who you were covering that weekend, but – yeah, we just kind of ran them both together like we normally would do for our normal Saturday games. But, you know, it kind of turned into Saturday before the time, you know, the game ended. That game went into double overtime out there in BYU. BYU won 28-21. So not only was it a 9:15 kick on a Friday night, it went into double overtime, too. So it was a late one. Ended up finally getting it in and got a couple. I think I got 2 hours of sleep. And headed out to the airport. I had an early morning flight out the next morning. And like I said, it was 3.5 hour delay there. And that, you know, put me behind. And, yeah, like I said, now that airports are just such a hassle to, you know, because Starkville is not exactly close to an airport. I mean, I have to drive 2 hours, whatever airport I decide to take, whether I fly to Jackson or fly to Birmingham. It's going to take me 2 hours to get to the airport, and you know it's just such a hassle to fly nowadays. I'm going to opt to drive. I'm going to take a book page out of the Parrish Alford notebook, and I'm going to drive from now on out if I can.
You know, you just leave a little earlier, and if you can take somebody with you and help with some of the driving, that's great. And if you can do that, you can actually work in the car. There are a lot of good things to that, and you can pull over and stop when you want to, and you know you don't have to. Go through the hassle of airport security. A couple of other game times announced for State and Ole Miss. State's game against LSU, Logan, while I'm out with the late game at Cal on the 16th, State will open SEC play at home against LSU at 6 o'clock, and that game will be on either ESPN or ESPN2. The other times that were announced were the Egg Bowl, which is back at Thanksgiving, and that'll be 6:30. On November 23rd, Thanksgiving night, in Starkville, a 6:30 start on ESPN. The other time that was announced for Ole Miss was the season opener against South Alabama on September 2nd. That'll be a 6:30 game on ESPNU. So maybe the next week on September the 9th against Tennessee Martin in Oxford, maybe I can get a little daytime football, man. I'm already counting my daytime football games. I don't think I'm going to have that many. After the Cal game, the Rebels have 2 weeks to get ready for Alabama, a road trip to Tuscaloosa. And Logan, that game for Ole Miss is forever the 8:30 spot, so I expect it will be that way again. So looks like it's turning out to be a lot of nighttime football. Sometimes you get a good season, man, where you have a lot of those daytime kickoffs. But that Cal game for Ole Miss on September the 16th, it's a big game. Now, we all know what South Alabama did against Mississippi State last year going into Starkville and winning. So you know that's possible. That could happen, Ole Miss. But you figure they beat South Alabama. You figure they beat Tennessee Martin. The Rebels should be 2-0 going out to Cal. And that's a team that won 5 games last year, had a coaching change. They're in transition. But that's an offensive-minded team, and they're going to score points. I would imagine that'll be a high-scoring game and a big test for the Rebels if Ole Miss is going to exceed what the expectations that many have for the Rebels in 2017, which are not high. If they're going to exceed those expectations, they need to be 2-0 going to Cal, and they need to be 3-0 leaving the West Coast.
Yeah, I'm looking at Mississippi State's schedule. They've only had 3 games that have been announced so far as times go. And I don't have any daytime football yet either, Parrish. I've got, in fact, that LSU game that was just announced is my earliest game at 6 o'clock. Got a couple of 6:30 games, the Egg Bowl. I guess you and I will be spending Thanksgiving together again this year, 6:30 on Thanksgiving. And then on September 9th, Mississippi State's second game of the season, it's actually their first road game. They go to Louisiana Tech. and play 6:30 there. And, of course, you remember in 2008 when Mississippi State was the first SEC school to go to Ruston, they got beat and beat pretty badly in that ball game in Sylvester Croom's final season. And that was kind of the season. That was a season opener for that year and kind of was an eye opener for Mississippi State coming off that 2007 Liberty Bowl. So Mississippi State will have their guard up whenever they go down to Louisiana Tech, but State will get things started off September 2nd at home against Charleston Southern. As far as I know, that's the first time they've played Charleston Southern. So,
Logan, at least playing Louisiana Tech, you won't have to worry about flying into Ruston, Louisiana. And on the drive over, you can pull off of I-20 in Monroe and get some Johnny's Pizza. So that's there are exciting benefits to driving through North Louisiana there. Hey, folks, that's it for this edition of Double Coverage, a production of the Daily Journal. We thank you for clicking in with us today. Be sure to check out our news podcast, The Memo, with Brad Locke and Derek Russell. That's coming to you every Wednesday and Friday, all things Northeast Mississippi. And Logan and I will be back with you next week for another round of Double Coverage.